Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's story is about the worst drug dealers in the world.
The Crown Corporation in Ontario that sells cannabis in this province, and Ontario said that it actually lost money, believe it or not, with the Ontario Cannabis Store, $42 million, which I'm sure some taxpayers are kind of scratching their heads about and kind of wanting to know what exactly is going on.
Last week marked one full year of legal cannabis in Canada, and with that came some changes to the industry. And that's a good thing, too, because right now, in the largest province and the largest city in the country, all the legal pot in the world isn't managing to convince Canadians to give up their friendly neighborhood weed guy. Why has the black market persisted in Ontario and in other places around the country? It turns out, shockingly, that there is no industry that government cannot mummify with red tape, even one that should be the biggest moneymaker in decades. So can they fix it, and can they turn a profit? It will depend on our lawmakers' ability to react quickly to industry trends and innovate in a rapidly evolving marketplace. I know, doesn't sound incredibly likely, but there is always hope, and soon there will be hope and cannabis-infused beer. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Adrian Gobriel is a reporter with City News in Toronto, and he has been on the weed beat for quite some time now. Hi, Adrian.
Happy Canniversary.
Oh, yeah. That's what we're calling it now.
Some are calling it that.
So a year after we legalized pot, how far have we come?
We've come a certain distance. I think we have a lot farther to go. You'll speak with some of the companies, you know, the Canopy Growths, the Tweeds of the world, and they say, listen, you know, it's been 1 year, you know, there's going to be growing pains, we're going to get it right, this is going to work. But then you look at some of the numbers on the flip side, especially when it comes to the black market, which we've discussed, and they're not very promising numbers.
And correct me if I'm getting this wrong, because it did seem unbelievable. The Ontario government lost money selling pot?
The worst drug dealers in the world. I don't know how it's possible, unless you're smoking your own supply, which we would
That's
hope
one
that
of the
government's
rules.
Not
you're
doing.
You're not supposed to get high
off your own supply.
So what happened? How did it happen?
You look at growing pains. I don't have all of their data in front of me, but the rollout has been difficult. Getting distribution has been difficult. Getting stock, you know, is difficult. You know, it's called weed, but it's not as easy as growing weeds in your backyard. It's kind of a technical thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And getting the right types of growers, the right amount of growers to get the amount of product that needs to be out there, it's tough.
Is demand outstripping supply right now?
100%. In both the black market and in the legal, you know, market. Again, the big companies will say they're figuring out the supply issues, though it's still an issue. You know, you'll talk to guys on the black market who have told me that they're looking for growers across the country because they've got more people banging down their door than they have weed in the bags to sell them. And it's the same thing in the government-sanctioned stores. You'll walk into a nice, glitzy downtown store that's got all this different selection, though when you start asking about, hey, can I have this type of weed or that type of weed, a lot of the times they don't actually have it in stock.
How do you fix that? I mean, is it just a matter of ramping up the industry on the growth side?
I think so. It's multi-pronged. I think there is, you know, it takes, you know, to get a harvest, it takes a certain amount of months to get your plants to harvest and then turn that harvest over again and again and again. And so getting that up, I think, is difficult. I think that they didn't understand the demands that were coming when they legalized marijuana.
Which also seems a little inexplicable.
Definitely. So there's that. And then, you know, I've spoken as well with some lawyers who've represented some of the master growers in this country, guys that were growing a lot of them for medicinal purposes for many years. But through the decades growing medicinal marijuana, they got caught up in charges. And these guys know how to grow weed and grow a lot of it. But they can't work for these big companies because they still have these charges. And again, really? Going back to marijuana, not really being an easy thing to grow and cultivate, you know, in large quantities, it's tough. You know, you got scientists in there trying to figure it out, but you need some of these master growers in there. And a lot of them right now, their hands are tied.
So they're not allowed to work in the industry because they've been charged working in the black market.
Exactly.
The last time we talked, it was about an illegal dispensary that the government couldn't seem to shut down, which I believe has now been shut down.
Well, we fingers crossed for if you're with the authorities who have been putting blocks up in front of it. Yes.
Is that representative of the difficulty of shutting down the black market? And I mean, you mentioned that it's still eating into the potential profits for the government. Where are we?
I think it is. I think it's a perfect example of the difficulties. You know, we know the most recent StatsCan numbers show that more than 40% of individuals are still buying some of their marijuana from the black market. Shutting down dispensaries has been a challenge for a municipality like Toronto and elsewhere in the GTA. But, you know, getting those basement, you know, neighborhood drug dealers, you know, cut out of the market has been an issue as well. And you know, if you talk to some of the top marketing minds in the country, they'll tell you that you need, you know, this perfect mix when it comes between distribution and it comes to prices. Those two need to be in sync. And if they're not in sync, then inevitably what you're going to do is push people towards the black market. And that's still what's happening today.
So how are they not in sync?
Let's look at distribution, for example. In the province of Ontario, ballpark, I think it's around 11 million people. We have 24 stores open right now. Look at Alberta. They've got just over 4 million, and they have 300 stores. So distribution-wise, we've heard about the demand. We've heard about the issues getting products to market and in the province of Ontario. And when you only have 24 stores for that many people, now, of course, 11 million people aren't smoking weed in the province, but there's a lot of people that are and a lot of people that want to get their hands on it. It's just not available. It's not readily available. You know, if you're coming from certain municipalities who have decided not to allow marijuana shops, then, you know, people might come into Toronto on the weekend. They might go to Yonge Dundas Square. They might pop into a store like Tokyo Smoke, and it's a novelty, and they get a couple grams, and off they go. But that's not supplying the demand that's in the market.
It's not building a habit.
No. And they need to, obviously, open up more stores. I think you can say that very easily. Now,
how does it compare to the number of LCBO stores in Ontario?
Great example. You know, there's more than 600 LCBOs. And that's not even including, I believe, some of the grocery stores that are now selling beer and
right.
Some of the smaller stores, like in small rural areas that do, you know, convenience stores that also sell their wine and liquor as well. So, you know, we've got 24 marijuana stores and more than 600 LCBO stores.
This is a little bit maybe straying off topic, but why does it seem as though there's this huge push to put more, and it's come from the provincial government, to put beer and wine in more grocery stores and to even expand it into convenience stores, while at the same time limit the number of marijuana stores?
That's a great question. I don't have the answer. I'll say maybe this. There's still, I believe, a stigma attached
mm-hmm.
to cannabis, to marijuana products that isn't attached to booze. You know, prohibition when it comes to liquor, it's decades ago. You know, it's
sure.
more readily accepted by and large, whereas they're still kind of got one toe in the water when it comes to weed. And, you know, while we have a provincial government in Ontario that likes to cut the red tape or say they're cutting the red tape and, you know, break down, you know, the amount of government involved in things, there still seems to be a lot of government involved in getting stores opened in
How
the province of Ontario.
How quickly is that changing?
Not quickly enough if you talk to the major suppliers and to the people out there that are want to get their hands on cannabis products. Right. And when we talk about that in sync, that marketing sync that needs to happen, the other equation is the dollars and cents and the price of marijuana,
right.
which also isn't in sync. Still on average across the country, a gram of marijuana on the black market is about $4 cheaper, give or take, than if you were to walk into a government-sanctioned store.
That's a huge difference, because what are we talking about? The difference between like $8 and $12?
Yeah, sure, and it adds up.
Right.
You know, if you're buying more and more, for sure, it can add up. And so at the same time, you're trying to break, you know, market trends. You're trying to break people's habits and pull them in. Something that no matter what you're selling is tough to do if people are dead set in their decade-old ways. Here we're looking at a commodity that people for decades have gone to, you know, their neighborhood dealer's basement. Some of them have relationships. Maybe, it's a way to get away from the kids, you know, for an hour and go sit down with your dealer you've had for years and smoke a joint and you enjoy that experience. They're actually trying to get that person to stop doing that.
Right.
And walk into a store. So, again, speaking with some marketers in the country, they say, listen, the government and these stores, they can't just meet the price of the illegal market. They have to beat the price. And right now, they're not even close.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
What are they doing? What is changing with the way pot is sold in Canada after a year?
Well, heck, it's being sold. You can walk into a store and you can get it. There are provinces, like we've mentioned, Alberta, where there's a lot less, you know, stipulations around getting stores opened up and where people can get out and get it.
But what kind of incentives? Like you visit the legal stores and talk to the people who run them. What are they doing? What's different about that and better than a dealer's basement that would maybe encourage someone to go legal?
Well, I think if you walk into some of the government-sanctioned shops, it's a bit of a, you know, curated experience for the cannabis user. You walk in, you're greeted. You know, most of these stores are well-staffed. You're greeted. You get an explainer on what a certain strain of cannabis might do, how it might impact you, how it might help you. Maybe you're not looking to get high. Maybe you want something that's going to help with your joint pains and you're looking for CBD oil. Right, you are getting a what is more of a curated experience out in the legal market, opposed to what might be a less knowledgeable seedy market on the black side of things. That can be argued either way. I'm sure there's some pot dealers that say, well, you can't beat the experience of coming over to my house and kicking your feet up on the couch and enjoying yourself.
Sure,
but you are getting it's a slick, civilized experience a lot of the time when you're walking in these stores, but unfortunately you're paying for it, and eventually the dollars and cents, you know, some people, there's a percentage of the population that are okay spending a little bit more money, and there's a lot of people who would, if they can get it cheaper, I'll get it cheaper.
Part of the way the government is perhaps hoping to change this is by evolving the kinds of things that they offer for year two. So how are those regulations changing?
Edibles. It's going to change pretty rapidly once they start to get the product on the shelves. So as of right now, technically, edible products are legal. But really what's happened is there's a 60-day grace period from about last week for companies to start manufacturing edible products.
I see. So they couldn't even make them till they became legal.
Legally, yeah. I'm sure there's been some Willy Wonkas of the weed world who have been concocting some interesting things. And there's lots of illegal edibles on the market right now. But yeah, for the big players to get their product legally into the shops, they can now start manufacturing them. And I know certain shops, in anticipation of this in the greater Toronto area and in other markets across the country, are doubling the footprint of their stores in anticipation of the edible market hitting the shelves, because it's going to be that much more of an experience. There's going to be that much more product for people to purchase when they walk in. And it's not just edibles that are going to be legal. We're expecting they can start hitting the shelves basically across the country by about mid-December. So it's not just edibles, it's topical creams, it is drinks, which we can talk about as a natural evolution for a lot of cannabis products, and as well as vapes. Which,
what are cannabis drinks?
Cannabis drinks, you know, it's cannabis-infused beverages. Whereas, you know, there was some, you know, hemp beers on the market over the, you know, the past few years.
Listen, I've had Hogtown hemp.
Yeah.
It's tasty.
Mixed reviews.
Oh, man.
Listen, not slamming it. It was what it was, and if you enjoyed the taste, then all the power to you. But it didn't get you high. It was just a beer made with, you know, with hemp, perhaps, then barley and whatever.
Sure.
Now, you know, there are big beer players that are getting ready to roll out. You know, they're not sponsoring the show, so we'll leave their names out of it. But
right.
but maybe they
could.
Will.
They
could, yes. there's some big major players in the beer game that are putting cannabis beers out on the market. That then you're going to have a reaction to them. You're going to get high in one way, shape, or form from drinking these beers. There's going to be different drinks. Interestingly enough, taking it one step further, Canopy Growth, which we've mentioned, one of the biggest players in the cannabis game here in Canada, has just bought a major stake in BioSteel, which is an energy
drink that the hockey players drink.
Yeah, the pink drink, right?
Right.
Drink the pink. And now, speaking with some of the staff over there, they've been kind of, you know, tight-lipped about a lot of it.
I can imagine.
The NHL hasn't, you know, sanctioned CBD, which is kind of an additive in marijuana products that doesn't necessarily get you high, but can help with pain reduction.
Right.
Some believe has some properties that can help you heal quicker, certain things like that. So that's probably what I'm going to guess that they want to put into the BioSteel drinks. The NHL doesn't allow its players to take CBD yet, though those discussions are happening. MLB, NFL, all these discussions are happening. And so that could be a big play down the road. But taking it one step back, when we look at the drinks, this is what we're going to be seeing. We're going to be seeing fruity, tasty drinks with different THC, CBD mixes and concoctions and cocktails. You're going to have alcoholic beverages with cannabis products. And when it comes to the edibles and the sweets, you're going to have, you know, an array, especially in the province. You know, the stipulations are that they can't appeal to children. It has to be, you know, very plain packaging. It has to be childproof. But what can be in there is they can have gummies. They can have they can have sour keys.
They just can't be packaged that way.
They can't be packaged that way. You can't, you know, when you go to the movies and you get your pack of Sour Kids or you go to the convenience store, it can't look like that.
Right.
But inside it can be, which maybe takes us to one of our next points, which is some concerns for parents.
What are those concerns?
Well, I think it's inevitable that at some point, little Johnny or little Sally is going to get her hands on their parents' or their older siblings' edible cannabis product that they purchased legally through the government or through a legal store, and they're going to have an adverse reaction to it. And that's a real concern for parents, and a valid one. It might not say Sour Kids on the package, but it's going to look like candy. It's going to smell like candy. It might even taste like candy a lot of the time.
Right.
And so there's some concerns there. I was talking with a professor recently. Now he's a university professor, but he's like, man, I'm an educator. And if I'm teaching a high school classroom, he's like, I'm freaking out right now. Because, you know, in years past, where maybe a handful of kids at lunchtime might go to the football field or off school property and smoke a joint and come back and fail their English test. Now in the classroom, kids could be passing around gummy bears and I don't have a clue. And it's just that much more readily available.
It's interesting that there's two parts to this discussion we're having, because on one side, we're talking about the government not being able to keep up with the black market in terms of just providing the basic weed at a basic price point. So what they are doing is opening the door for beverages and gummies and all of these kinds of things. Are those two things in competition, given that the government's supposed to be regulating this stuff to protect children in the scenario you just described, yet also it's kind of their competitive advantage?
I think they are competing against each other, and the government's going to have to be really careful, you know, about how this is rolled out. Similar to how we've seen the first year with cannabis products, you know, mainly oils and combustible weed, you know, flower as they call it. There's going to be growing pains when it comes to edible products. And, you know, they are trying to limit the amount of THC in, you know, from edibles to drinks, to topicals, to vapes. So yeah, they are competing, though. Yeah, it is as well in their interest to get these out there because there's money to be made.
Right. And again, I'm playing dumb here, but I can't see the government being able to sell weed cheaper than somebody who is just selling it out of his basement with no overhead. So, but what they can do is offer me this huge array of products that all look tasty and inviting and, to your point earlier, are well curated by a knowledgeable staff and all that kind of stuff. But that means that they have to like really push in that direction.
For sure. And again, that, you know, there are edibles already on the market, illegal edibles already on the market being made. And so they need to find that price point as well, that sweet spot that speaks to what they're doing. Though perhaps people will be more inclined to buy their edibles from a licensed government retailer because they know exactly, it's written on the package, exactly what's in there. Time will tell, you know, but it's going to be interesting to watch it roll out.
What are you going to be looking for when this stuff hits the market over the next few months?
I think you're going to be watching to see how, you know, what stories pop up when it comes to the public consuming these products and if issues arise. Policing it's going to be difficult. You know, from the business side of it, it's going to be interesting to see. It is a bit of a horse race right now between these big companies that are concocting all these crazy, you know, gummy bears and drinks and whatever in their labs to see who has the competitive edge and who comes out ahead here. There's a lot of money at stake. And some of the companies have you know, kind of whispered a little bit of what they have planned, but they haven't rolled out their full catalog yet because everyone's, right, you know, playing really coy right now. They're going to have little media events. And I've been told that some staff, you know, they're having little tastings to knowledge, get their staff knowledgeable about what they're going to be rolling out.
Oh, interesting. Yeah,
it's almost like working at a restaurant and you have like a meal tasting. So those are some of the things I think that are going to be really interesting, things you're going to want to watch. And then, you know, we've mentioned that, you know, vapes will now officially be legal. We've heard some concerns in recent weeks with some diseases and some infections when it comes to fungus in the lungs. And a lot of these people have reported using marijuana vape products and concerns that whether it be pesticides in the oils or whatnot has been making young people and a lot of people across North America sick. So how do you combat that?
And we'll talk to you in a few months and see if our government's turning a profit.
We'll see.
Thanks, Adrian.
Thank you.
Adrian Gobriel, reporter with City News. That was The Big Story. For more from us, you can head to thebigstorypodcast.ca, where there are now two consecutive episodes not featuring federal politics. You can also talk to us at TheBigStoryFPN. Do you still use your neighborhood weed guy? We want to know. And finally, this podcast and all the others on Frequency Podcast Network are available at frequencypodcastnetwork.com, yes, but also in all of your favorite podcast applications. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.